Welcome to episode 2 of BTN's new podcast series, providing an in-depth look at our What to Watch series. I'm BTN Executive Editor Michael Baker, and over the next several weeks, I'll be talking to industry thought leaders on the key trends that will shape the corporate travel industry over the coming year and beyond. Today, I'm joined by Festive Road Managing Partner Paul Tillstone, and we're going to be talking about social capital. What does it mean, and what does it mean in particular for the future of business travel? Thank you for joining me today, Paul.
It's a pleasure, Michael, a real pleasure.
So some of us may have heard this term social capital before. It's not a new term in particularly, but maybe we aren't exactly sure what it means. So how would you define it?
Having come across the term myself a couple of years ago and having been something that struck me, I've done a little bit of digging on the subject itself. And actually, an industry friend of mine and somebody who shares a passion for this subject is Michael Friedrich from Tag2. He alerted me to the fact that it was actually a definition created by French psychologist sociologist in 1983 called Pierre Bourdieu. He talked about four pillars of capital within society: economic, cultural, social, and symbolic. And the way that he described social capital is that actually it enables a person to exert power on the group or individuals who mobilize the resource. It's not universally available to all members of a group or a collective, but to those who provide effort to acquire it by achieving positions of power and status and developing goodwill. So I think that's the sort of theoretical, scientific approach to it. For me, I kind of describe it as something a bit simpler. It's the impact that you have on someone to build trust in a relationship and interest in leveraging that relationship and taking that relationship further in a business sense. So in my world, that's kind of stuff that impacts your brain and your heart. So that you and I, for example, have met in person. We're on a call, a virtual call here, recording this podcast. But we have a relationship that transcends beyond the virtual. We know a little bit about each other. We have a business relationship. And so there is social capital between us. And we can choose to invest in that, or we can kind of let that dwindle by not making contact, bumping into each other every 4 years at GBTA or something like that. So that's how I see it. It's a buildup of that investment in brain and heart.
We talk a lot about the ROI of trips. So how does this play into that? Is social capital something we should be considering when we're looking at the ROI of a trip?
I had a philosophical conversation about that this very morning, actually. I mean, imagine if you were, as a salesperson, imagine if you could measure like an indices of social capital with your prospective customers. And imagine if the data could tell you on the CRM that as that social capital figure went up, the investment in relationship paid off and you converted more of those where the social capital was higher, and the social capital was higher when you spent more face-to-face time. I think the sort of essence of that, and it goes back to one of the core messages of the purposeful travel model that we produced, is actually what we need to get to is that travel is considered an investment because you know that the travel being undertaken aligns to corporate objectives, rather than travel being seen as a cost to the company and therefore being subject to the whims of fourth quarter reductions or whatever it might be. And I think that salesperson example is one illustration. Of course, social capital doesn't always result in a direct and immediate financial return. There might be other objectives that are important. And, you know, social capital helps with driving collaboration and driving end results as well. So certainly not all financial. But imagine if we could get to that indices, how powerful that would be.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me back in the old days of social media. I don't know if you remember, there was a company that used to have like a clout score where you could look and look across your different accounts and try to figure out how much clout you had. So this kind of seems like, you know, it's something that seems like it's hard to quantify, but it seems like there might be a way to do it.
I remember that actually. And I remember being obsessed about trying to get that score up to as high as 100 as possible. But I mean, it's also an interesting angle to this is, can virtual play into building that social capital investment? I think it can. The illustrations of that, I think, is Crystal Knows is a bolt-on to LinkedIn. And what it does, for example, if you and I are on this call now, I can bring up Crystal Knows and it AI analyzes your LinkedIn profile, everything you've posted, everything you've liked, And it tells me on a DISC formula what your personality is like, how to communicate with you. And so that's a really good example of, I can look at that because I'm virtual and actually adjust my language, my tone. Maybe if it says you prefer somebody to be a little bit more forceful in their approach, I can kind of interject and challenge you. And you might think, oh, that's interesting. I like the way Paul operates. In a room, you know, I guess you use your intuition to judge those moments. You can certainly read up on someone beforehand, but to have a tool like that at your disposal virtually shows you, I think, it's not just about face-to-face. Social capital is about using technology and human to build those relationships.
We're seeing other pressures rising against business travel. There's, of course, the sustainability question. There's questions of traveler well-being. How does social capital kind of act as a balancing figure in this against kind of those sort of negative pressures on business travel?
I agree. I think it's a really fascinating time for travel managers. And, you know, there are two ways of looking at this. Either they are bombarded with many competing demands and many of them placing pressure on the travel budget and the reason for travel, or it's an opportunity to actually take that step back and think about what travel does for their organization, take a more strategic position versus the operational position, and go for that piece about travel being an investment. And I think obviously you need to have some C-level or senior level connections in order to make that point. But I would also argue it's a really great conduit to creating that C-level connection, to getting to the heart of what makes the business tick. And I think if I think about sustainability and how much of an impact that's going to have on travel programs, I don't know that we're ever going to get to a point where we can say, okay, the travel program has no discernible impact on the carbon footprint of the company. I think that is a far stretch for us as an industry. And in many ways, I use the term net honest, not net zero. We need to be honest about what travel is valuable. We need to be honest about the carbon footprint, but we need to be able to justify its value to society and to the business, and then do whatever we can to offset, mitigate, whatever that is. And I think that social capital is a strategic topic that allows us to have that dialogue. I think the other thing is about raising the game of the travel manager. What social capital does, especially in a dispersed workforce, is give you the opportunity to engage with other departments and functions within the business, whether it's HR, real estate, those are involved with the commuting component of the business. Because if you've got a dispersed workforce, we have to think of travel in its broader sense, not just people who jump on an aircraft to go and do business, but people who are mobile within the company. And any of that mobility should sit under the travel program in some way and under the guise of what's going to bring more social capital benefit to people in the organization. Paul Abbott from GBT talks about the rise of internal meetings. And I think that's definitely a growth area in our industry. And that is all about building teams and building connections in order to fulfill the objectives of the organization. That's perfect social capital material.
Absolutely. As someone who is now fully remote, I've learned the value of that, and not seeing my team members every day as I used to. It's a whole different experience.
It comes back to not just the travel itself, but the format of the meeting. In many ways, this is the perfect touch point between transient travel and the meeting M&E sector. Because I just think about, for example, my walk and talks. I don't meet everybody in traditional formats. I meet them in a walk and talk because we get much deeper in the relationship. We build more social capital from that format. If you're just bringing people together and plonking them in a boring old meeting room, I think you're going to have less bang for your buck in that social capital, in that relationship, than if you use different formats. So it's also a really good kind of travel and meetings integration discussion as well.
Well, thank you, Paul. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about some more of the ways that social capital can highlight the values of business travel. I hope you're enjoying our new podcast series. This is just one of several new broadcasting features BTN will be introducing this year. We're also launching a new video series, which will include a feature where we will be sitting down with top executives across the industry called 5Qs with Business Travel News. Extended Stay America Chief Commercial Officer Kelly Poling sat down with BTN Editorial Director Elizabeth West for the first installment of that series. And you can see that now. So keep an eye out on this space for a lot more, including how you can suggest topics or questions for future podcasts and videos. So we're back with Professor Rhodes Paul Tillstone, and we've been discussing the concept of social capital and what it means for business travel purpose and justification. Now, Paul, last week we had Flight Center's John Morehouse on here, and he was talking about the shifting definition of business travel. And one of the things he specifically mentioned was Apple Vision Pro as a potential game changer. Still haven't had a chance to test it myself, as he recommended, but that makes me think about virtual reality. And we already talked a little about how you can build social capital with virtual meetings. But as we kind of see advancements in technology, is that going to advance those capabilities as well?
Yeah, I mean, I go back to the point about that bolt-on technology that helps you identify the personality traits and the talking track that you might use with people on a virtual room. I've no doubt at some point technology is going to enable us to be more effective in our face-to-face interactions. I do have some concerns over it. I mean, how many billions of dollars have been pumped into that particular setting? Using virtual right in front of their face. And in many ways, I think it even more amplifies the importance of using that face-to-face time to actually talk to each other and build relationships. I mean, I think about our family dinner and, you know, the mantra is put your phones down and let's use the time to talk to each other. They're often the most important times to build relationships between all of us. I think there's a risk that if you let too much technology enter a room, a meeting room or a meeting format, you undo all the benefit of moving people into those spaces through travel. We run advisory boards for quite a few of the suppliers in the industry. We actually, wherever possible, try and strip out any tables in front of people so that people can't have their laptops open or mobiles. We even sometimes remove plasma screens so there's no slides, because they spent all this money bringing people into a room. The least we can do is try and get the most out of people's time by having them look each other in the eye. And I think in many ways, this goes back to a point I made at the beginning, that social capital is also about trust. And stuff gets done when you trust each other, when you know that you can share something and it will be used in the right way to benefit both of your objectives or the industry or whatever it might be. And I think technology can get in the way of that trust. I'm not saying it does all the time. I'm not sure that the objectives of the big tech companies to have us buying all this stuff necessarily means that it'll end up with deeper and better relationships.
Absolutely. We've seen the impact on attention spans and things like that. So there'll be studies over the years, I'm sure we probably haven't even realized some of the effects that we're seeing socially by some of the devices that we've become so attached to. So I think this brings up the question, and you kind of mentioned this in your piece, you know, how do we make the determination of what's going to be driving the most social capital? How do we make that determination of when in-person is best, when face-to-face is best, when something could just be solved as an email or as a virtual call? How do we make that determination, and what role should travel management have in making that determination?
I think the first thing, you got to go back to the kind of principles of purposeful travel. If you don't know the reasons for travel in your organization, I'd say you're not doing your organization justice. And, you know, we had this conversation, which was, well, you know, one of the reasons for travel is to go to a conference. Well, that's not the reason. The conference is a vehicle. What's the reason for being at that conference? Well, you know, it's to sell. Okay, well, that's a good reason. So actually, quite honestly, being able to demonstrate the success of a conference through conversions or sales, and it can take a while, I appreciate that, but that's a standard measure of success at a conference and therefore success of the trip. It's to network with others. Well, if you had a social capital metric that allowed you to judge whether your relationship has been improved by being face-to-face, that's another measure of that success. So I think you can't get to those measurements, those ROI measurements, unless you first define the real deep reason why being face-to-face brings value. What's the objective of being there? Then I suspect there is a little bit of trial and error. You've got to actually maybe switch it off sometimes and do stuff using virtual. I've seen, you know, examples where companies have tested a change in travel policy, see what the impact is on cost. Well, the same principle applies here. Change the method of meeting, see what the result is, and do some test and learn. And I think we haven't got to that stage yet. And that's definitely, I think, something that travel managers could start to look at, and where suppliers might be able to start using different tweaks to systems to see what how the booking might change, or the length of stay, or the type of meeting room, or the type of format for the meeting might make as a difference to the outcome of that face-to-face.
And that brings up the question of how well do you think that this concept is understood in the boardrooms and the C-suites? Is this something that travel management could have a role in sort of emphasizing, evangelizing on that importance, you know, particularly as their bosses are evaluated the travel budgets to make sure that this is something that they're taking into consideration?
In the boardroom, people understand the value of face-to-face. Now, I'm not suggesting that all of the efforts to drive people back into their offices is as a result of understanding the value of that face-to-face, but I'm sure a large component of it is. I'm sure there are other drivers as well, and, you know, productivity or whatever it might be. So I think travel management has the opportunity here to be a conduit for mobility, for productivity, for getting more out of people when face-to-face is really valuable. But that means widening your remit within the organization. That means kind of going out of your comfort zone. And I know there are some travel managers that have done that. There are some that are trying to do it, but I don't know that it's widespread within the travel management community. So it's definitely an opportunity.
Now, is there a generational aspect to this when we're talking about social capital? Do different generations have different needs, and do they need to be addressed in different ways? We've all heard that stereotype of, you know, a millennial or a Gen Zer who finds just talking on the phone to be a stressful experience. So is there a generational window that we should be looking at this through? And will they kind of be gathering their social capital in different ways? Is there a way that you kind of have to make sure everyone is getting what they need out of an event or a travel experience?
I've got a 21-year-old and a 15-year-old, you know, both boys who are growing up in a world where they are inundated with technology at their fingertips. And I always talk to them about the importance of being able to talk to people wherever possible. I try and embarrass them in public by introducing them to people. And, you know, I think in the long run, it pays off. But I would say, you know, that generation, I think, definitely has A, less experience on integrating with each other, and B, is probably more nervous of big situations like that. I wouldn't say it's not everyone. I've seen some amazing people coming through in the travel industry that just seem to have amazing confidence and are really not afraid at all to engage with people. But I think if you're sort of looking at aggregate of boomers and Gen Xers versus Gen Z and Gen A, there's definitely a shift in the confidence and comfort of face-to-face. I'd also say, you know, there is definitely more understanding of neurodiversity. And I think that's a beautiful thing, that we know that people interact in different ways. I'm a complete outgoing individual, extrovert, but I do have my introvert moments. It depends, you know, in the environment I'm in. And we have this expression at Festive Road, which is you do you. If you feel uncomfortable in a social situation, remove yourself, go and find your comfortable space. And I think that tolerance and allowing people to do that is something quite important if we're going to really make face-to-face something that's even more powerful in the future and empower people to choose the right environment in a face-to-face situation. So I sort of think there's a number of factors. There are also cultural influences and just how important face-to-face is in different cultures, and yeah, demographic and neurodiverse components. So yeah, it's a highly complex subject, but isn't that beautiful? Isn't it lovely to find something so both theoretical, unexplored, something that's directly related to what we do as a business, bringing people together to drive objectives? I think that's why it's such an exciting topic to me.
So it's hard to have a conversation today without talking about the AI component. Is that something that could be pulled into this and that could potentially measure or kind of make determinations of whether you need to travel or not?
I think this is a beautiful application of AI. And I go back to that bolt on LinkedIn, bolt on Crystal Knows. I'm sure that is using AI to assess personality types and shifts and way to communicate. And I think AI could definitely help to determine if there's a relationship that needs some investment, face-to-face investment, in order to achieve your objectives. Working off the back of a CRM, working off the back of your sales targets, working off the back of the likelihood of conversion. I think it's a perfect sweet spot for AI to help you to make the right decision on whether you should be having face-to-face and therefore whether you should be having travel. I also think there's an opportunity for it to identify how you might be able to leverage an existing trip by staying longer and identifying which of your ecosystem are based within that location, that physical geographical location, and streamlining invites to meet up with those people, creating the most efficient use of your time while you're there by picking people in the same district. Maybe creating a walk and talk meeting from one location so you end up in another location where you can meet somebody else, and really maximizing that time when you're on the ground in another country or another city. So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting application for AI.
Absolutely. I could see a future where it could sort of take everyone's preferences and needs in mind. And I mean, not only just suggest you meet up in the city, but tell you maybe what activity you should be doing.
Yeah, exactly. Some people like meeting for a coffee, others for a beer, others for a walk. Imagine if it kind of worked out what the perfect meeting format was for you and I next time we met, and just suggested that that's what we do, instead of me asking the question and you feeling begrudgingly that you have to go for a walk with me when you really don't want to. So I think, yeah, there's a really beautiful application there.
Well, thank you, Paul. I'm up for a coffee or beer with you anytime. But unfortunately, today we're out of time. But I want to thank you for adding a little to my own social capital bank today with this wonderful conversation.
It's been a pleasure, Michael. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Once again, I'm BTN Executive Editor Michael Baker, and you've been listening to the second episode of our podcast series on topics and trends to watch in 2024. I'll be back next week chatting with BCD Travel's Olivia Ruggles-Breese about new ways to think about sustainability, biodiversity to be exact. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and check in with BTN to stay up to date on the latest in corporate travel news, analysis, and events.